You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
I am Matt.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to the Gaming Podcast. Well, we've got a bit of a routine going at last, Alex. We're actually recording two weeks in a row, as it were, which is great. So let's get cracking because, you know, we've got stuff to get to later on in the show. But first thing is, do you have any news for me, Alex?
Not one bit.
No, because you have been busy. So I have some news for you. And I want your input on this, because this is a game you're looking forward to more than anything else. Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about this.
You've heard about it, yeah?
Having no gender option. That only body type and voice.
That wasn't what I was going to ask you about. But okay. I was going to ask you, what's your thoughts on, A, the first-person cutscenes?
I'm not fussed by that sort of thing, to be honest. The cutscene's a cutscene.
Because from what I've heard, Witcher 2, obviously, it was first-person.
Third.
Yeah. Witcher 3, obviously, it needed much wider for the cutscenes. So, not quite. So, hopefully, it won't suffer from that. But there's also been talk about a non-lethal playthrough.
That's surprising, to be honest. I mean,
what's your thoughts on that? Can they do that with such a game?
I don't know. I mean, it literally says in the trailer, I can't remember what the name of the city is, but it is literally one of the world's... Well, it's one of the world's cities with the highest crime record ever. So... To have a non-lethal playthrough is a bit surprising.
It's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, considering in the first trailer that they released, well, sorry, like second or third, I can't remember which one it was, as his friend gets gunned down, they're literally there having a crossfire with like eight different people.
Interesting.
So I will be surprised if there is a non-lethal playthrough.
That's what I saw online today, so I thought... As a person who's looking forward to it so badly and really wants it to be playable or easy.
I mean, I guess a stealth option is a non-lethal. Maybe you knock them out instead of killing them, but I can't see it myself.
Well, Metal Gear Solid had that for the second game. They actually gave you tranquilizer rounds rather than bullets. You could use either or, and there actually was certain things you got if you did a non-lethal playthrough for the whole way through. Which is cool, but, you know, it's not for everybody. I'm pretty sure some people will prefer to take the nearest rocket launcher and blow someone out of it.
I'd rather shoot them, to be honest. But since I mentioned the fact that there isn't going to be a choice of gender, it's something that brought up, as is exactly the same as the Witcher games, there's, I don't know how many people, but there are a few romance options. But originally, they were to be... It's not like other games where it's just a bunch of options. What was originally planned was some were gay, some were heterosexual, whatever. In other words, you had to be a boy to romance some people, a girl to romance others. But now they're saying that there's no gender option. So how is that going to work?
Well, not sure about that. But I do know that according to ProGamer.com, someone was messaging with Cyberpunk 2077. Now, I'm aware that this may not be legit, so I take this with a pinch of salt. Someone messaged, and then they said to him, "Hello, some people said there are no more TPP view in cutscenes, etc. Is that true?" Meaning third-person view. Mm-hmm. The reply was, in Cyberpunk 2077, Emotion is very important to us. So yes, all cutscenes will be first person. The reply from the person who sent the original message. What about the sex scenes?
That's a good point.
The reply, same.
But to be fair...
I said that out loud! Oh dear, this won't make the Christmas special this part, that's for certain. But yeah, that's...
To be fair...
I don't want to see that Cyberpunk,
CD Projekt Red usually do first-person games. I mean, Witcher's games were always an exempt from that, but their games have basically always been first-person.
Yeah.
So I very much expected Cyberpunk 2077 to be first-person.
Well...
I mean, I can't say that I'm not a little bit disappointed by that, but it was kind of always obvious.
Well, we'll wait and see what happens on that one. I'm pretty sure that as soon as we get more information, Alex will bring it to us as our official Cyberpunk representative.
Yeah, I know. I will take the day off work for that one.
Yes, I'm pretty sure he took the week off for that one, guys. Right, okay, my other bit of news... I know you're not a big Resident Evil fan, Alex, but...
Well, you say that. I mean, I'm sure I'd like it if I played it. I just never got around to it.
Maybe the new Resident Evil coming. On the 9th of September, just before the Tokyo Game Show, they are dropping information about the new project. It's been called Project Resistance. That's the working title for what it is. From what people have been able to gather, it's in the vein of a very poor Resident Evil Outbreak. Now, Outbreak was the first idea behind a multiplayer Resident Evil. You'd have a party of four, and if you didn't have all four, then it would be AI controlled.
Thus, I think that's a very clever idea, because obviously you get some people who aren't, well, in the position to play with friends, because...
Unfortunately, yes. But there is also the problem with Outbreak, I'll come to in a moment, but they've done this before, sort of, with Operation Raccoon City. The content was great, the game wasn't the best, though. But with the way Resident Evil 2 has been the game of the year, and I will fight anyone who says otherwise about that, it has been the best game I've played all year, and I've played that since January. It's been fantastic. I will go back and play that happily right now. It's that good. Outbreak, though, the problem with it is because obviously Capcom made it in Japan. Obviously. When they ported it to the West, like Europe, I can't speak for America, but in Europe, because the game was online, you have to have servers, obviously. There were no servers in Europe for it. So the game
That went down well.
The game didn't work in Europe. Obviously now...
That must have gone down really well.
Exactly. And then they turned the servers off on... It was PS2 as well, I think it was as well. So they turned the servers off for that about 4 or 5 years ago in Japan as well. So I'm like, a game which had so much potential and yeah, it fell by the wayside. And the thing is, after Outbreak, they even brought out Outbreak File 2, they called it, which was a sequel. Still couldn't play it online in Europe. It's ridiculous. How did we do the same thing twice? I can't speak for America, so anyone in America who's listening that actually did play online with this, let me know, because I think that you're talking at your backside. But yeah, I'm looking forward to a Resident Evil game that you can play online properly with your friends, and if it's got the same... effects of Resident Evil 2. Even Alex would like it. Killing zombies? Who doesn't like killing zombies?
If it's multiplayer, I would definitely be into it.
Multiplayer Resident Evil is a game that everyone should get involved with.
I would definitely be down for that.
Absolutely. That's all the news I've got, though, because most of the best news is covered by Chris, so this is just what we've wanted to talk about. I knew Alex wanted to talk about Cyberpunk, so with that all dealt with, we'll move on to the main part of the show. Which is one of our top threes, Alex, which seems to be going quite well with people. I ran a few ideas past you and you said they were rubbish. So this one we come to, and he's smirking me because he's absolutely right, some of them weren't great. This one is our top three boss fights. Now, the thing about it is, it's not any sort of, there's no sort of criteria for this.
Yeah, we're not going on, well, we're not going on, we're picking that boss from that game because it was the most difficult. We're doing this one because everyone liked him. We're just picking what bosses we thought were fun, a good fight, so forth.
Yeah. Why they said to us, we'll explain why, obviously, as we go along. So the question, so Alex, I've got mine listed from 3 to 1, and I have an honourable mention as well. So, do you want to go first or second with giving your list?
I will let you go first.
Thank you, sir. Right, my first choice is from the Xbox 360, a game I've been playing very much recently. It is the Riftworm from Gears of War 2.
All right.
No, Gears of War 2. Been playing that with Ben recently because he's looking forward to Gears of War 5 coming out. He'll be giving us a full update on that. We're going to probably drop that during the week, next week. So that's a bonus episode coming your way, guys, with Ben giving you his full review of the game. But Gears of War 2 obviously features Marcus Fenix and Dominic Santiago and the rest of Delta Squad. Now, Delta Squad didn't just step into the crap with this monster. They actually stepped inside the monster itself. This Riftworm does what's in the tin. We're talking about a worm that could actually eat whole cities. That, yeah.
So a big worm, then?
It was a big worm. After ruining whole cities, devastating the cogs with ease, it's not just a boss, it's a level in itself. Because you spend the entire level inside the bloody worm. You have to face crushing organs, grinding guts, and antibodies. And the antibodies are actually trying to rip you apart.
Sounds kind of fun.
Add to it, you have to kill 4 hearts inside the damn thing. And every time you take your chainsaw rifle to it to cut the arteries, it will try and drown you in its blood.
Okay, fair enough.
That is it's one of the most gross bosses I've ever had. But I tell you what, it stays in my mind because you're thinking, yeah, I don't want to go through that ever again, literally. It definitely earned its spot on my list for that reason. So, Alex, what's your number 3?
My number 3, because it sort of wasn't a boss, but I think it's worth classing as a boss.
Okay.
Was back when I had a PS4, it was on Dragon Quest Hero 2.
Mm.
On Dragon Quest Hero 2, there's a few times where you have to fight a whole army of monsters.
Right.
And it basically, it's that long. I mean, these battles would take you 20, 30 minutes of just spamming buttons and switching characters to fight all the enemies.
Okay.
But my favourite battle was called Battle of the Great Divide.
Right.
Where you had to, you're in a big chasm. One end, you've got all the monsters spawning. Well, that's all the big monsters, and then you have all the monsters around. But you have to protect the king while you're there, and he is absolutely useless, and his guards don't defend him. It's one of those situations where you're meant to protect him, he's got a whole army, and they're useless, and it's basically down to you to kill absolutely everything and protect him at the same time. Mm. And I've failed this so many times. Because leveling up in that game is such a difficult game. It's been the same with all Dragon Quest games. You've got to grind, otherwise you're just not going to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so rewarding being able to beat this. I mean, you must fight 500-600 monsters.
That's rewarding then, definitely, when you get through that lot. A sense of accomplishment, definitely, from the sound of it.
It's definitely a good boss fight. Because, I mean, you have 3, I wouldn't call them bosses because their health bars aren't that big, but they're basically like three mini bosses near the end.
I know the sort of thing you mean, yeah.
But that's why it's made it to the bottom of my list. It's not really a boss, but it's worth counting as a boss.
I will save a bit of a tape as well. Alex struggled with this list because he couldn't decide. He had to keep knocking people off the list and getting some sound of it. Right. Okay, right. I'll give you my number 2 then, shall I? From Arkham Asylum, the first of the Batman Rocksteady games, had a lot of great bosses in it. Every boss was different. They couldn't keep just spamming the same thing to beat them. There were lots of different ways. You could beat people neutrally. You had different things for each person. Scarecrow, though, stands out to me. You get the effects of the fear toxin, and you end up having to fight against an absolutely huge version of Scarecrow. Obviously, you're tripping on his toxin. You've seen the films. So he's going through the toxin, and you have to, and with his sanity crumbling around him, Batman, you've got to. So you go from being like a third person game into a side scroller. It's brilliant. So you get a chance to check it out afterwards, Alex. It is absolutely fantastic. You have to work your way across to get to a bat signal to shine at him to, like, purify him almost. It's really weird for that part of it. But let's face it, this is Scarecrow's reality. It's completely messed up in the first place. But you have to use all your fighting and your stealth. Stay out of the searchlights, basically. It's a simple idea of staying out of searchlights. But it's a really unique way for a boss fight to happen, which is why I've gone for it. And I really, really enjoyed it. And he's the main boss, it turns out, in Arkham Knight. So, you know, even though they beat him here, he doesn't come back. That's because Batman doesn't kill people. So, of course, he's going to come back. Scarecrow for me, for my second pick. What's yours, Alex?
My second pick, which is a bit of a shock boss if you're okay at the game.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it doesn't have a very high health bar. But one of my favourites is from The Witcher 3.
Go on.
He's called Deadlaugh. He's a higher vampire, and he's the final boss of the Blood and Wine DLC.
Okay.
The thing is with bosses in The Witcher 3 is they don't have big health bars, but they can kill you in a couple hits. It's very realistic in a sense. It doesn't take long for a boss to kill you. It's not like other games like Skyrim, where you can be burning, shot with arrows, and still be walking. A couple hits, you are dead.
Yeah, which is not very forgiving if you're at a lower level, either. I found that out when I started fighting a load of dwarves who were level 23 and I was level 4. That wasn't wise.
No. The Witcher 3, that's what I bless about the game, is it's not an easy game.
But it's a really fun game, though. So that's fine.
And I just can't count how many times I died fighting him. Because, obviously, being a vampire, they have super speed, super strength, and he has three different forms that get harder every single time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in his final form, you've got to destroy these blood vessels, giving him extra life and healing him.
Yeah.
And they also give him invincibility. So you have to destroy these before you can do any damage to him. But being a vampire, he's that fast. You get a couple hits and you're lucky to dodge his next hit as he comes flying up behind you. Which is what made him such a good boss. But the only downside is how short the health bar is. Which is why it didn't quite make my number one.
I'm going to say, it sounds like this could have been number one quite easily, Liz, Alex. So I'm very intrigued to hear number one in a moment. On to my number one. Now, I have to admit, when I was coming up with this idea, I had this guy in mind as my number one from the start, and I had to think who else could go on there with him, because let's face it, this guy could dominate the entire list. This is from a game Alex has not played, I'm aware. Came out in 1998. This is Psycho Mantis.
I've heard of it. I've never played it.
No, it's a game. It's not the game. Yeah, I've heard. It's not the game. It's the character in the game.
Oh, well, I've heard the name from somewhere. I assumed it was a game.
You've heard it because he is one of the bosses in Metal Gear Solid, and I've mentioned him part of my review.
That's probably where I've heard it from then.
Yeah, when I mentioned the review. He is one of the best bat villains ever created. And the reason for being is because the boss fight is the most unique you'll ever have in video gaming. First of all, as I've mentioned before, when you start the cutscene with him, he will tell you to. He'll read your every thought, read your memory card, and tell you what games you've been playing. If they're games made by Konami, he'll mention them by name. If you've saved often, and if you're not, he'll call you reckless. And then he'll tell you to put your controller on the floor. Literally talking to you, the player, not the cat, not the snake. Talks to you directly. He'll put the controller on the floor. This is just after they brought out vibration for the first time, Alex. So this is revolutionary. I will now move your controller with the power of my will alone, and just vibration. Obviously, now that's not that impressive. Obviously. But for,
but 99, for the time,
for 1998, that's
next level.
1998 was fantastic, and that's and but the cool thing is that when they remade it for the GameCube under the Twin Snakes, like sort of like update graphics and everything, when he says put your controller on the floor, Snake will turn and look at the camera, and actually nod and say yeah, go and do it, sort of thing. I'm like, what? That's brilliant. it's little things, but breaking the fourth wall, I love. But then when as soon as you start, he says, this demonstration is over. And then as you begin, it'll say blackout and throw his arms to the side. And your screen will go pitch black. And in the corner will just be the word Hideo, which is Hideo Kojima, of course, because that's the sort of thing he does. And then it'll go small, and then it'll come back in again, and he's moved. So he's using your own TV against you, so you can't win the fight. And then you'll go and start fighting him. Matter if you're shooting him or punching him, he'll dodge everything until you take the controller out and plug in the controller port too. As I've said before, this is so simple, but absolute genius. Because that way, man just can't read your mind. And the really cool thing is, I think I mentioned before, you try to do it on the PS4, when Screaming Mantis, the follow-up version of Psycho, turns up, you can't just switch a controller port. Doesn't let you do that. You can do it, but it doesn't work. But after that, after you beat Screaming Mantis, Psycho Mantis reappears from the afterlife. Don't ask. And then makes your controller vibrate again before he's dragged off to the afterlife and finally gone forever. And I'm like, and it was nice, because it was like, vibration is back! Because that was just after PS3. Career launch, but PS3 didn't have a vibration controller. Do you remember that, Alex?
No, I don't remember that.
The PS3 shipped without a vibration controller, yeah.
I don't think my PS3 had vibration, actually.
Yeah, exactly. It shipped without...
The PS3 I had was a real fat box of the machine that I got for 64 quid from a second-hand store.
The DualShocks always came later, I found.
Yeah, so I reckon I didn't have a DualShock.
So the fact that Psycho actually mentioned it by kayfabe, said, like, vibration is back. That's a sly dig at Sony from Kojima there. I like that. So yeah, Psycho Mantis, because of how innovative it was for its time, and the graphics may not hold up still, because obviously we're talking 21 years ago at this point. The graphics don't hold up, but the game still does. And yeah, Psycho Mantis is my number one. Alex, what is your number one?
Just working out when this came out quickly.
That's fine.
1998. Well, my number one... And in my opinion, it's my favourite boss of all time. It's one of my favourite games of all time. Unfortunately, it's been that long since I played it. I can't really explain what the fight was like.
Okay.
But I'm talking about The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, back on the Nintendo 64.
Okay.
The final boss was Ganon, and he, well, from my memory, he's always been one of the main bosses in all The Legend of Zelda games.
Yeah.
And it was the first game that I ever completed all the way through of that sort of style, going around open worlds, fighting bosses. It was the first sort of game I ever played with that format.
Right.
So fighting Ganon was just amazing at the time. I believe you standed, he floated in the middle, I believe, and you had blocks all around him in a square, and you had to shoot him with the arrows.
Right.
When he became vulnerable to take out his health. And when you thought he was dead, he comes at you with a form that's brand new. It's like five times the size of you. It's got bull horns. He's just a monster of a fight at that point. Just when you thought the fight was done, he comes at you with a second form, and obviously the second form's always twice as hard. So it was definitely, at the time, amazing.
It's like,
unfortunately, it's been so long since I played it, I can't explain it in further detail, but
that's okay.
But my first ever boss of that style, in for how much I love that series, it's definitely got to be my number one boss.
You would have been really little back then as well, I suppose, wouldn't you? As well?
I think I was about 8 when I played The Legend of Zelda.
Well, it's meant to be for kids, so that's fine. Meant to be for kids, anyway.
But it's for adults.
It's for adults. That's right. Games are created for kids and big kids. So, right, so if that's the case, Alex, do you have an honorable mention?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you want me to go first, though?
Yeah, I'll let you go first.
Okay, this applies to any game in this series. The Elite Four.
Sorry, you have to repeat that, I missed it.
The Elite Four in any of the Pokemon games.
Alright. I mean, it's sort of not a boss, but
it's an honorable mention because it's as close as you get to a boss, because you've got to face them one after the other. And
it was definitely a challenge. I remember playing. Did you ever play the Sinnoh region?
I played Sinnoh. That was Pearl, and Diamond, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I played Pearl. Yeah,
I loved that. Cynthia was just such a difficult gym leader.
Mm.
I found after Lance, they weren't ever really that difficult. I mean, Steven was enough of a challenge, but he was all steel, so he was easy enough to beat.
The rock type's always been the hardest one to do on games. Well, even when you start out anyway, especially if you take Charmander. But that's because, you know, because grass type and water type are strong against rock, apart from fight. So I'm sorry, I am burning a rock to flames here.
I want to say Lance was my favourite because of how difficult he was. In he had 3 Dragonites, and one of them just defied physics of Pokemon. How difficult he was. But I think my honest favourite is Cynthia, because her selection of Pokemon and how difficult she was, especially in Platinum when her Garchomp was level 78.
That's ridiculous.
When that just broke every other gym. Every other Elite Four, I mean. I don't think any other Elite Four has gone that high.
There's gonna. Do you know what we should do, Alex, one day for one of our top threes? Top three game times we think we've been cheated. Because I've got a few I could go up with, definitely.
I could definitely talk about a few.
We might do that next time, actually. We might come out with that. If anyone can figure a better one, come back to us on that one. But yeah, so the Elite Four is the closest thing you get to a boss. I mean, you have to fight the Team Rocket Team Rocket boss. But
Team Galactic, Team Flare, you've got the bad guys, but they're not.
They're not the boss of the game.
Of a fight.
They've been building up to this for the entire game.
If they were a boss, the Elite Four is always the final boss.
Yeah, and they're the one I look forward to the most, because you go into it planning everything. You plan for every single one. Because the first time you go through, especially in the days before the internet, you didn't know which. What each person had. So it was, did you take your water types?
Before you got to the 3DS version, where you didn't have XP shares and the games were genuinely harder.
It's brilliant. So yeah, that's why the Elite Four is my honourable mention.
It's why I'm looking so forward to the new Pokemon game, because going back to that is just going to be a blast. Especially on the Switch and playing it on a 50-inch telly.
So what about you, Alex?
Well, it's not really a boss, but I think it's worth classing as a boss.
We'll class it one regardless, because it's our show. So.
And I'm sure you'll agree with me, because of how unique it is. is taking out the bad guy at the end of the Way Out and escaping his island. The thing I like about the Way Out is it's working with a team, even though Matt is useless and I am useless. We work well enough as a team.
We had an absolute blast with that game.
And I think the fact you have to work together and you have to be coordinated, it's what made the final mission / boss in Escape so fun. It's because if you didn't work together, you had no chance.
Absolutely. This game actually made my list when I was guesting on Chris's show about indie games. I mentioned how much fun we had playing this game.
It was a blast. I mean, I know A Way Out 2 is never going to happen, but it would be, I would happily play it. It would just be amazing if a second game of that sort of design in playthrough came out.
They proved that it can work, so they can definitely bring up more like it.
It's hard to work, really. That's the main issue. If they did a reskin of other people in prison, it wouldn't work. It'd have to be a completely different story, but it's never going to work as well as the first Way Out.
Maybe not. Maybe this is their... What's the thing I'm looking for here? Maybe this is their big moment and this is not going to get any further from this. Maybe. But, you know, hope not. It was a game which I adored. We actually played it a few times, actually. We played both playthroughs.
We played it 3 times so far.
Spoilers ahead for people who haven't played it yet.
You've been warned.
You have been warned. I'll literally give you 30 seconds from now.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Right, let's go.
Okay, Alex had a word for what he said. What is it called? Dirty Stinking Pig?
Dirty Stinking Pig. That's what it was.
He calls him a Dirty Stinking Pig, and he refuses to play as the cop, undercover cop.
I just prefer the other character.
You would.
I genuinely just prefer him. And I think him surviving was genuinely the better ending.
Maybe, but...
Whatever the case, both endings are bittersweet.
They are.
There is no good ending, but they're not bad endings.
And for people who skipped ahead 30 seconds, welcome back. Right, okay. Right, I think that's... both of this wrapped up quite nicely, Alex, to be fair, and some good picks there as well, and two surprising honorable mentions, but I definitely agree with yours, definitely. It was great, and that could have made your list quite easily. Right, so what have you been playing, Alex, this last fortnight?
I haven't really been gaming that much. There is one game I'm waiting for, and I just cannot wait after playing it because it's my sort of game all over, which is Greedfall. It comes out on the 11th of this month and it just looks amazing. It's open world, it's character customization, your companions have personality. It just looks like it's going to be a great game.
It does look amazing and I can't wait to play it at some point. I've recently got Mad of Medan.
That does look good.
I've recently acquired it. It's a game which I cannot wait to play. It's online multiplayer. If you've ever played Until Dawn or any game along those lines, all your actions have actions later on. Always a good thing. Alex obviously can play Walking Dead. He's into that sort of game anyway.
Though that isn't really horror. I wouldn't class Walking Dead games as horror. The Telltale series anyway.
No, as in decisions you make affect everyone later on, yeah. Sort of thing. That's what I meant by it.
I don't really know a lot about this game. That's why I just assumed it was different.
It's certainly a game that we could probably end up playing as well, and because it's an anthology, there's more games coming in the series as well, and it's out now. I'm sure it's everywhere. Retail price is $24.99.
Is that it?
$24.99, yeah.
Fair enough. Then
downloadable right now on all systems. No crossplay, unfortunately, which is unfortunate, but very much a game that people should be getting in their library because it's. There's more to come. I can't wait. What have I been playing? Oh, Gears of War, lots of Gears of War with Ben, getting ourselves ready for Gears of War 5, which is going to be great. Obviously, it's Gears of War. It's always good.
I've never played Gears of War. I always meant to, but I just didn't.
Well, Alex, if you ever wanted to, you can catch up, because every single game of the series is on the Game Pass.
I'm sure I'll catch up to it eventually, but I'm in no rush.
Well, if that's the case, Alex, I will let you off, but it's a game that you really should consider. Right.
I'll consider it.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Thank you so much for listening, guys. You guys have always been awesome for tuning in for us. Chris will be back next week before he heads off to Spain for a week. So, let him know if there's anything you want him to cover when he gets back. As always, guys, you can find Alex at SpiderBird21 and SpiderBird on Xbox, and I'm at Matt.UK everywhere. Find the show at Matt Alex Game Pod. I've been Matt.
And I'm Alex.
And this is the Gaming Podcast. We'll see you in 2 weeks. We're out of here. This podcast is a Matatec production for the Visionaries Wrestling Network.